We talked about the reason to do this course was to really to try to reach that 20-minute experience. Other people spending in the world. It's not just for that 20 minutes to try to get to that time. And we talked about that. And we're going to talk later, by the way, about how to get to that experience. So, shouldn't miss. Okay. And then we spoke a little bit about Travesty, which you should go see sometime, and asked him a question, how are bodhisattvas supposed to act and live and think, you know, and practice. And then the Buddha started to talk about how to do that. That they should try to save other people, and that's bodhicitta. And really that bodhicitta is not so much being a nice guy, it's more working very hard to understand emptiness, try to change your own body and mind into a Buddha, and then teach other people how to do it. And that's the process. Okay, that's what bodhicitta means, and that's what bodhisattvas do. And then tried to talk about, you know, bodhisattvas are supposed to keep bodhisattva vows. Why? Because, and you have to understand that those vows are not like some kind of rules or something. They are an outline of how to do the six bodhisattva perfections. So really, if you just keep your vows, or if you track them all day long, then you're automatically doing the six bodhisattva perfections. You see, otherwise, the six perfections are some nice thing, and, you know, it sounds nice when they teach them from bodhisattva, you know, bodhisattva's way of life, and they sound nice and they're inspiring, but how do you actually practice them, you see? I mean, how do you make a daily, you know, like an exercise routine of how you're going to practice these things every day? And that's the book. And learn your bodhisattva vows. If you don't know them, there's a course that we made, and you can take that course. But then you, all day long, every 2 hours, you check the next vow, and you see how you're doing. And that way, you do the bodhisattva perfections. That's a normal schedule for the whole day to keep yourself acting like a bodhisattva all day long. So if you ever took any initiation, you swore to act and think like a bodhisattva. And you swore to check these vows every 2 hours. You already swore. I'm just showing you how to do it. You already agreed a long time ago, okay? And that's how to keep the perfections, the six perfections. Now the Buddha gets onto a new subject with Subhuti. He says, I think you need to act like a bodhisattva. So Subhuti says, how do you act like a bodhisattva? And the Buddha says, you should give. Okay, now he's talking, when he says giving, he's talking about all the perfections. And he actually goes through two of the perfections in the sutra just to give an example of how to do a perfection with an understanding of emptiness. Because if you don't understand emptiness and you try to be a good Buddhist and you try to be a bodhisattva, Lord Buddha said what? Don't call this person a bodhisattva, okay? Now, technically, you can be a bodhisattva without understanding emptiness, but in this scripture, we're talking about bodhisattvas who are close to getting enlightened, and he's saying, look, you can't call yourself a bodhisattva if you don't understand emptiness. And here he says, bodhisattvas have to do giving, which is the first perfection, right? Giving, with an understanding of emptiness. Otherwise, we can't call them a bodhisattva. He says, otherwise, don't call yourself a bodhisattva. And don't call it giving, okay? Because it's not. And he's very strict with him. He says, don't stay in things. He keeps saying, don't stay in things. Throughout the whole sutra, Lupulami Nepa means, don't stay in things, okay? And so really, first thing today, we have to talk about, what does it mean not to stay in something, okay? Then the Lord Buddha has this, he looks like he's on an acid trip, actually. In this sutra, the reason there's so few commentaries is just totally, where did he come up with this next thing? Then he comes up to Subhuti and says, oh, I got another question for you. And Subhuti says, you know, yes, Lord Buddha, what's your question? And he says, you know those 112 special marks that you get after you become a Buddha? You know, like you have special head and ears and you have a special thing. thing right here and your body's all cold and all things like that. And he says, you know how those special marks that a person has right after you become a Buddha, that only Buddhas have in their full clarity and in their full positioning. Like world presidents have them, which is another story. Chakrabarti and world emperors have them, okay? But they're kind of off-center, or, you know, like Cindy, what's her name? What's her name? You know, anyway. They're almost perfect, but there's one more, you know? So that's a world emperor. Buddhas, they're just perfect, you know? The marks on their hands, the wheels and everything, they're just absolutely perfect, okay? So then the Lord Buddha comes up to Subhuti and says, suppose you ran into some guy and he had these perfect marks everywhere, perfect. Do you think we could call him a Buddha? And Subhuti says, no. You know, and Buddha says, right. You know, and he says, why not? You know, and he says, oh, because Lord Buddha, you said before that those things are impossible. Those marks can't exist. Okay? And it, you know, and they leave it like that. You know, that's the conversation. It's kind of like the Heart Sutra. Okay? So we're going to discuss those two things today. He's talking about how to give without staying in things. And then he jumps like he's on a trip to, oh, and by the way, if somebody has all those marks that only Buddhas have, are they a Buddha? And so Buddha says, no. And Buddha says, right. And he says, why? He says, because they don't exist. Okay? So it sounds like two people on an acid trip, actually. So we have to cover these two things today. And those are the next two things in the sutra. I think first I'll talk about the second part, and then we'll get back to the first part. Okay, so what is it? What are these marks on a Buddha? What is it to be a Buddha? What is a Buddha like? You know what I mean? Like, I was at the tree the other day, and I'm trying to call up this image of Lord Buddha, and I'm trying to think, you know, what is a Buddha really like? And to understand that, you have to understand what we call the four bodies of a Buddha. Okay? Now, they teach these bodies, two bodies, three bodies, and four bodies. Okay? Different scriptures teach it different ways. They're all the same thing. Okay? Like, if you don't split them into four, they can be two. And it's all the same thing. I like to teach it in four because that's more detailed. And then I'll show you how the three and the two come from the four. Okay? So don't worry about it. But we're going to cover what it is to be a Buddha. And four bodies, by the way, to start with, is sort of, the word body is sort of a deceptive word, you know, like you see one head with four bodies or something, and you're like, boy, he has to buy four pairs of pants, you know, something like that. It's not like that. It's like the four parts of an enlightened being. Okay, so we're going to cover that today. Those are called gu. Where's Alila? Do you want? They say ku. Ku? Okay. Ku means holy body, like an enlightened being's body. It's called a ku. Okay? And the first of the four bodies we'll call, say, tuku. Tuku. This is a word you heard, you like tuku or something like that. People say tuku. Tu means to emanate something. Like, in the scriptures it says if your meditation gets pretty good, you can emanate like different animals. Like, you could emanate a bird and fly away from your body or things like that. Or you could, when you get up to the higher parts of the form realm, they're emanating. You can emanate ice cream, you know. And then in the higher parts of the form realm, you can emanate ice cream and eat it. And then you and somebody else's emanation can play volleyball with each other or something. You know, you get different levels of ability to emanate. And it comes from a concentration. Tuku means the ultimate emanation, meaning Lord Buddha's is actually staying in Lord Buddha's paradise after they get enlightened. And then they have the ability to send bodies out to different planets to help people. Okay? And all in scripture, there's all these hundreds of debates about how do they send them and what do they look like. But the bottom line is this. First of all, they don't have any preconceptions. What do you call it? They don't have to think to send an emanation. You see what I mean? They don't think like, oh, it's 3 o'clock, I've got to send an emanation down to, you know, Chechnya or something like that. If someone's ready to see an emanation of the Buddha, the emanation appears. And that's due to the Buddha's power. That's one of the powers of a Buddha. So it's not like they think, oh, you know, this lady needs to have an emanation to teach her Dharma out at that place. They don't think like that. The power of the Buddha is such that the minute you're ready to see them, they're there. And they're appearing in the way that would be most helpful to you. So, and they can emanate as all kinds of beings. There's a Chokituku. Say Chokituku. Chokituku means supreme emanation. It means, I think of it as cult classic. Like there's a Diet Coke, there's Cherry Coke, there's all these Cokes, but then there's Coke Classic. You know, Coke Classic is the emanation body that Lord Buddha sends to this planet at Bodh Gaya to get emanated under the tree. Okay, sorry, to get enlightened under the tree. Okay, and that's what we call the classical emanation body. It has 112 special signs. Okay, 32 major, 80 minor signs on the body. That's what we call the classic emanation body. But then, you know, 2,500 years later, if you need to learn patience, Lord Buddha will emanate an irritating person right next to you in this class, you know, and they will test you during the whole class. And it'll turn out to be more valuable for you than the class. You know what I mean? And this person is sitting next to you, irritating you during the whole thing. You know what I mean? And that's not a Chokituku. That's just a plain old tuku. Meaning, Lord Buddha has found a useful emanation for you. Maybe more useful than the teacher at that moment. Because what you need is patience and not maybe something else, okay? So that's a tuku. Anybody around you could be a tuku, okay? Obviously, Buddhas aren't emanated to single tukus. There's a big debate in the Abhidhamma Kosha, and they decide, oh yeah, they can do billions at the same time, on billions of planets at the same time. The whole population of the planet Earth could be tukus, except for me, okay? No, really, no problem. Okay, sometimes I'm really worried about it. Thanks for letting me teach, though. It's really good for me. So it could be like that. Okay, or it could be sprinkled, or it could be everybody except two of us. Okay, well, you don't know. Okay. Also, Buddhists can emanate. They call other kind of trupas are as beautiful things in the world that teach you something spiritually, like a sunrise, or the sound of the wind through the trees, and you, like I remember when my mother passed away, and that night there was like this wind going through the trees, and I heard, you know, I kind of was thinking of it, it kind of taught me about impermanence or something, and that's, or the sound of waves on the ocean side, and you're sitting there, and that can all be, they also emanate as non-animate things, as inanimate things. They have the power to emanate in any way that helps you. So it's not crazy to say a Buddhist practitioner could go out in the forest or go to the ocean side and just sit down and meditate and listen and see if something teaches you. This is one of the typical chinle. Chinle means the way that the Buddha acts in the world to help people. So you don't have to be embarrassed if you're attracted to that sort of thing. Okay, they do that all the time, and it's very typical tuku. Okay, so those are all the kinds of tukus that, and that's the first kind of body. Right. This one body is obviously physical, meaning visible. You can see it, you can touch it. Okay, you can hear it. By the way, the Sanskrit for that tuku is nirmanakaya. Okay, nirmanakaya. This is Sambhogakaya, if you care. They seem to use the Sanskrit a lot. Say longku. Longku. The word long is short for longchupa, and it means to use something. Like if you, like when you do the long mandala offering, you say nu palangchu, which means the Western continent where they use cattle, okay? And that, it means to use something or to enjoy the use of something. So it came to be translated as enjoyment body, okay? I don't know, it's okay. I like to call it the paradise body or something like that, okay? This is the physical form that an enlightened being has in their own paradise, okay? So the day you get enlightened, you will have your own paradise. Every Buddha has their own paradise. And that paradise has all these five different qualities. For example, you can only meet high-level bodhisattvas or better in a Buddha paradise. Okay, things like that. Those are the only thing people talk about is Mahayana and Dharma all day long. Okay, like that. There are five qualities of a Buddha paradise. Okay. By the way, is this a pen or something to chew on? So where are those Buddha paradises? Yeah. It's just here. It's the same principle. Exactly the same principle. Okay? It's not like you have a different place or, you know, there's some teachings about a location for the Buddha paradises. They're talking about some other realm, form realm thing. Don't get confused. Oakman in the form realm. Okay? That's a different thing. But, and I'm not suggesting that you're in paradise, but you didn't figure it out or something like that. I mean, you know that's not true because of the ride I took yesterday from Varanasi here, okay? I mean, if that's paradise, you know, okay, I'm not suggesting that, you know, I'm not saying this is paradise and you didn't notice it yet or something like that. This is what will be your paradise when your karma is improved enough that you see this book as a Buddha paradise, okay? And it's the same thing as the... Don't forget, this is, you know, we're going to change the name Prajnaparamita to Penaparamita. You know, just remember the pen, okay? This tent, this people around you, are just like this cylinder. They're just cylinders and balls and different colors, you know? And the way you see them is totally dependent on your past karma. And if you don't work on that, you can wish all day long, you can meditate all day long, it's nothing going to happen. You have to keep your vows, which is... The vows are the list of tricks to see this place as a Buddha paradise. If you still see it some other way, that's your problem. You have to keep your vows better. You have to know your vows and keep them better, and then because this place is empty, it will change for you. Okay? So don't think there's some other place you have to get to. People always say, I'm going to leave samsara. You know, I say, how? They say, I'm moving out of New York. You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to Arizona. Everything will be better. You know? Not. You take your mental afflictions are the first baggage you pack, you know, and they come with you. It doesn't matter where you go, you know. It doesn't matter. You can run, but you can't hide from them. You carry them wherever you go. So you have to work on the place that you're at, really. You have to try to... This place, because it's empty, will become your Buddha paradise, okay? And then you'll be a Sambhogakaya sitting there enjoying it, okay? And that's the second physical body. So there are two, I've given you so far, one and two are the two physical bodies of a Buddha. Okay? These are the two physical forms that they show. Okay? Okay. Because you get to look any way you want. You know what I mean? So, you know, I have my own idea about what I'm going to look like. Okay. It's wisdom. Okay, and this term means Dharma, okay, and then Guru means body. And this is the, when you talk about four bodies, this means the mind of a Buddha, the wisdom of a Buddha, okay, their mental state. So far we had the body they have when they send out bodies to show people, then we covered the body they have centered in their own headquarters, their paradise. And then this is the way they think. This is their mental state. Okay, number three is called a body, but it's really just their mental state. Okay, what is that like? They have the ability in every instant of time to see directly every object in the universe. Past, present, and future. Okay? So in 1 millisecond of time, an enlightened being can see every event that ever took place or is taking place now or will take place in the future throughout the universe for all time. And they see all those things in one, every instant of their life. They see all things. They see all the things. Okay? Meaning also your thoughts, my thoughts, everything else. All the thoughts you ever had, all the thoughts you ever will have, all the thoughts you're having now. They see all of them in 1 millisecond. They see all of those things, okay? And they have that ability. That's part of their mind. They also have the ability to see simultaneously
what we call the normal world or normal reality, or what we're going to learn this idea called deceptive reality or fake reality, which is what we're in right now. And they see that, and they see ultimate reality at the same time. Nobody else can do that. Okay? Like an Arya, a person who just saw emptiness directly for the first time, while they're in that direct perception of emptiness, they cannot see anything else. They cannot be aware of anything else. Remember we said yesterday, they can't even think of themselves, I did it. I'm seeing emptiness, you know. If the minute you think I is a normal thing, then you'd be out of that state. You see, I mean, only an enlightened being can see both at the same time. They see directly emptiness and all the normal stuff in the world. Also, they have all of their sense powers have the same ability. You know, they can see everything in the universe with their nose. You see what I mean? They can hear every object in the universe with their big toe. And things like that. Okay, they have this ability. It's a different kind of mind. It comes in the 8th chapter of Perfection of Wisdom when we study it in the monastery, Abhisama Ankara. And it's a beautiful long list of how they think, what they look like. Okay, and you should study it. It'd be nice to have a special class just on that, on all of their qualities of their mind. So that's their mind. They have simultaneous to those direct perceptions of everything, they have ultimate compassion all the time. Okay? All the time. It's in their mind. Okay? All the time. Okay. Now we get to the most interesting of the bodies, number 4, right? By the way, I forgot to give you the Sanskrit for the last one, right? It's Jnana Dhammakaya, okay? This is number 3, okay? Jnana. Say, Ngo Nyiku. Ngo Nyiku. Ngo Nyiku. Ngo Nyiku means essence body. Essence body. By the way, the last body is wisdom body, right? This is very cool. I like this body the best. This body is the emptiness of the other 3 bodies. Never forget it. It's the most important body they have. I'll say it again. The essence body is the emptiness of the other 3 bodies. Now we'll get into it, okay? All right. Let's talk about the emptiness of the other 3 bodies, okay? I mean, it sounds very sexy, but it's very simple, okay? Let's say you bump into a tuku. Oh, by the way, I wanted to tell you that when you say tuku in Tibetan, like an emanation of a high lama, the idea is that they're sitting in their sambhoga kaya, their enjoyment body, sitting in their paradise, and they're just sending out emanations onto the planet Earth, you know? Okay, I think I'll do 14 Dalai Lamas, you know, or whatever. And then you just send them out. You see what I mean? And that's why tuku means an emanation of a high lama, okay? So could there be 2 tukus of the same lama at the same time? Yeah, I mean, you could be a billion. What are you talking about? Okay? Could there be, is the little Buddha movie right? You know, could it be one boy, one girl? Yeah, okay, they don't have a problem with that. You know, they can do that, okay? So that's the idea of a tuku. Now, if you didn't want to confuse your followers, you might want to, you know, send one out shortly after the last one was withdrawn. And then they'd do, you know, a nice, you know, it'd be easier for normal people to track you. You know what I mean? And that's okay. You know, they do that too, just for your convenience, not because they have to do that, okay? So that's what, when you hear the word so-and-so tuku, that's what it means, okay? It means that a being who has the ability to emanate, they're just emanations of a central Buddha in their Buddha paradise, okay? We're going to talk about the emptiness of the 3 bodies. I think then we'll take a break, okay? So what would be the emptiness of a tuku? So I mean, you run into some, there's some guy on the subway who shoves you just when you're trying to concentrate on reading the Tibetan for the patience chapter, and you know, and you're just mad. You see what I mean? And so he's a tuku, right? And what's the emptiness of that tuku? I mean, what if you get angry? You say, I'm concentrating, you know, and they say, oh, what, man? And you say, I'm reading this Buddhist book, you know, and they say, well, what's it about, man? And they say, patience, you know. And the guy says, you don't seem too patient to me, man. You know, and then you learn something. That would be a typical tuku incident, you see. So you got to be really careful about tukus, you know. So that's a very typical tuku incident. And what is their nature? You see, let's say at that moment you think to yourself, you have this mental realization. He just taught me something. You know, maybe he's a tuku. You know, like your mind goes one step beyond normal, and you get this very holy thought, you know, hey, what if this guy's like Lord Buddha? What if he's trying to help me, you know? And then you're looking at him. You know, by the way, they'll never give you any clues, okay? I mean, they're very good at that. And just when you think they're not going to give you a clue, they'll say, you know, steal it a cuckoo, you know, okay? Or something like that, you know? But what's the emptiness of that person? Okay, do they come from their own side? No. Okay, that's all. Are they a bunch of parts put together? Yeah. Are they just their head? We'll go through this analysis, right? Everyone likes this analysis. Is the guy, the irritating guy next to you on the subway, is his head him? No. Is he the subway, which is something other than him? No. Is he all his parts together? That's the important one, right? Is the guy next to you who irritates you on the subway all his parts together? No. Not until one more thing happens, right? Which is that your karma wells up from the subconscious, billions of karmic seeds sitting there waiting to come up. They are like airplanes on a runway waiting to take off, you know? And then prioritization process, you know? You have just been studying, you just collected a lot of virtue, you saw His Holiness, you saw Lama Sherpa at Bodh Gaya, and so out of all those billions of airplanes waiting to take off, one gets put up front by the air control tower. Say, oh, virtue number 27, go up to the front, take off, you know, and then you're like, this guy could be a dooku, you know, so that's like this really good thought, you see what I mean? And that thought's coming to you because some virtue coming up in your mind. If you didn't have that virtue ripen in your mind at that moment, you would just see an irritating guy in the subway, you see what I mean? And then this virtue from 6 months ago from getting sick in Bodh Gaya and purifying everything, you know, it's come up. And just before you get off the train, you're like, this guy could be a tuku, you know? And then that's just a karma ripening in your mind. He's no tuku from his own side. Is he an asshole or a tuku? No, really, which one is he? It's the same, it's the penant paramita, okay? Same thing, okay? He's neither one. He's neither just a simple person who's irritating you, or is he a tuku, okay? You happen to have the karma in your mind, to take the same parts, the same colors, the same cylinders, the same balls, the same angles, the same colors, and your mind's interpreting as oh my God, this could be a tuku, you know what I mean? That's just a projection of your mind, that your mind is organizing this same parts into a tuku that 10 minutes ago were just an irritating guy, you know? So, that's his emptiness, okay? That's the emptiness of that guy. He's neither an irritating guy who's a normal person, nor is he pretending to be an irritating guy and an emanation of Lord Buddha. He's neither one, from his own side. Okay. Does that mean he's not really either one? Of course it doesn't mean that. What's real mean? Real means he functions for you. He does something for you. He gets you enlightened. Okay. Of course he's real. You know? Of course. If you think he's a... I shouldn't say that. If you truly perceive him as an emanation, if it comes up into your mind, this guy could be an emanation. That's working for you. That does something for you. It's going to get you enlightened if you keep thinking like that. You might get to kill him or something like that. You see what I mean? That means it's real. You see, if it functions, it's real. You know, go out in front of an Indian car, stand there and let it break your legs, you know? Say, is it real? Yes. You know? Is it just a perception of your mind? Yes. Okay, that's, by the way, why it's real. Okay? That proves it's real. Okay, so that's the emptiness of a tuku. Now you got the swing of it. You do the Sambhogakaya. You're sitting there in your Buddha paradise. You know? You look down at your skinny, hairy arm. And suddenly, it's this beautiful, white, Taurus, like beautiful, warm, white light coming off, you know? And just, you know, really, really beautiful, perfect, you know? And you look down. What's the emptiness of that? It's not that from your... white arm, okay, beautiful white arm. That's the emptiness of the Sambhogakaya. Okay, if Lord Buddha had any lousy karma left in Lord Buddha's mind, in the Sambhogakaya, in the paradise, they'd look down and the whole thing would be great except there'd be three freckles or something, you know, left over from the old days. You see what I mean? And that's the emptiness of the Sambhogakaya. Okay, now what about now we get to a harder one. What about the wisdom? The emptiness of the wisdom. Catch this. This is really cool. Really, there's two things going in your mind all the time, right? There's somebody listening to your thoughts, and there's somebody making the thoughts. If you think about it. Like, you're just the audience, right? If you think about it, I mean, this drove the mind-only school crazy. They had to come up with a thing called Rangrig, apperception. They decided the mind can talk and listen at the same time. And the other school said, no, if you think about it, the talker has to be a millisecond behind the listener. Or vice versa, actually. Depends on how you think of it. Okay? The listener happens a millisecond behind the talker. By the time the listener is there, the talker is already in the past. Got it? Because you gotta listen. Okay? This object is always a millisecond behind you. Okay? Meaning, it has to come up first, and then your eye consciousness occurs towards it a millisecond later. By that time, this thing is gone. It's like the star in the sky, you know, like burned out 1,000 years ago, but the light hasn't got here yet, or the lack of light hasn't got here yet. Okay, so you're sitting there and you're listening to your mind talk. You hear your thoughts, right? You perceive your thoughts. They are just consonants, vowels, a, e, u, e, o, and your mind is forcing you to hear them as thoughts. You see what I mean? It's the same thing as the pen. Got it? Your thoughts are the same as the pen. Okay? There are certain indicators of sound, mental sound. There are certain indicators in your mind. There are k sounds, ch sounds, b sounds, t sounds, and then there's a u, a, e. And then your mind, due to your past karma, is forcing you to hear a coherent thought. It organizes those noises, white noise, into thoughts. And you're forced to hear certain thoughts due to your past karma. It's the same as the pen. Okay? Exactly the same thing. Your own thoughts are karmic ripenings coming to you. Okay? You're not the thoughts. You're listening to the thoughts. Okay? Is that a ripening? We'll talk about it later. Okay? But you're just listening, and in the way that if you're a dog, you're going to see something to chew on, and if you're a human, you get to see a pen, your thoughts are the same. Okay? Your thoughts are the same. You will hear sweet, pleasant, happy thoughts if you've been good to other people. And from the same sounds in your head, if you've been bad to other people, you'll hear, I'm not happy, I'm depressed, I don't like this other person. You know, you'll keep hearing all these stupid thoughts. You see what I mean? Your thoughts are also blank. Your thoughts are also empty. Your thoughts are also unorganized data, syllables, you know, like that. And your mind is forcing you, your past karma is forcing you to interpret them as happy thought, unhappy thought, okay? Understanding what this guy's talking about, not understanding what this guy's talking about, okay? Your karma is forcing you to organize your thoughts that way, okay? That's the emptiness of your thoughts. That's the emptiness of your mind, okay? So Lord Buddha's mind, his omniscience, also has emptiness, okay? So those three emptinesses taken together. Emptiness of the tuku, the body that you see, come down to planet Earth. The body that sits up there down there in their Buddha paradise, okay? And then their own thoughts, right? the emptiness of those three is, if you think about it, it's the coolest thing about a Buddha. It's the most precious thing about a Buddha. If he didn't have emptiness, then where would he be? He'd have to look down at the same scrawny, wrinkly arm that he had back on Earth, that Bodh Gaya. You see what I mean? If he didn't have emptiness of his arm. So this is the most precious thing about a Buddha, is that they have emptiness. Okay? The other three bodies have their own emptiness. So let's call it body number four. And that's the essence body. Okay? By the way, you've heard about Buddha nature? Sugata-garbha, right? Sangyeki Rig. And then these people get up, they get to America or someplace, and they say, oh, Buddha nature means you have this little Buddha, he's right under your third rib on the right, and if you could just uncover him, really, you're a Buddha already, and why have I got diarrhea if I'm a Buddha? You know, you just didn't see it yet, you know. That's not what Buddha nature is. Buddha nature is the only thing about you now that you get to take all the way to enlightenment. What is that? Do you want to have any part of your physical body right now when you get there? Is there anything about your physical body that you'd like to still keep when you get there? You know, like, is there some part of your bones that aren't cold right now? You see what I mean? Is there anything about your mind that you particularly want to keep by the time you get there? Like your jealousy or your anger or just a little bit of desire or something like that? No. But there is one part about you which is goddamn lucky, and you should keep it all the way to Buddhahood. What is it? It's your emptiness. Okay? That's your Buddha nature. And that's great. I'd love to have that. Okay? Why? It's the fact that my arm is not coming from its own side. It's the fact that my thoughts aren't coming from their own side. Which means they have a potential to become enlightened. I'd love to keep that. You know, that potential, which means their emptiness, now that's something I'd like to keep. And that's the only thing you do get to keep. And that's why they call it Buddha nature. That's the only thing Buddha-ish about you right now. You see? It's the only useful thing about us right now. Is the emptiness. Is the potential we have to become those things because we don't exist from our own side. The emptiness of your arm is your saving grace. That's your ticket to heaven. It's the emptiness of your body and your mind. Okay? So we've covered... So I don't have to say, why does the Buddha say... Look, Subhuti, do Buddhas have marks? And Subhuti says, no, marks are impossible. What's he talking about? Marks that come from their own sign are impossible. That's all. That's the punchline, you know? That's the punchline. And then somewhere over the century, somebody forgot to put the punchline in. Okay, and then now it seems like weird. It just means that the marks don't come from their own sign. So why does little Buddha repeat himself? He says, no marks, no marks at all. This is of great concern to Buddhists around the world throughout the centuries. Lord Buddha never says anything worthless. Lord Buddha never repeats himself without a reason. Like in the Heart Sutra, he says, lekso, lekso. He says, right. Right. You know, and then for centuries people said, why did he say right twice? He never wastes words. Why would he say right twice? Why do you say you don't have any marks, you don't have any marks at all? Okay? The first time he says no marks, he's talking about the marks on your physical body, okay, on the emanation body, the mnemonicaya, okay. The second time he says marks, he's talking about the marks in the sense of the other three bodies, the marks on your mind, the marks on your paradise body, and even the marks of your emptiness, okay. They don't have any nature of their own. They don't come from their own side. The Buddha's emptiness is empty, okay. That's why he says it twice in the sutra, okay. Alright, now that you're thoroughly confused, by the way, it'll get clearer as we go on. You gotta get used to the idea. Okay, take a break. Come back in about 5-10 minutes when they ring the bell. Okay, we still got some stuff to go. How do you give things without staying? Okay. We had, Subhuti asked Lord Buddha, what are Bodhisattvas supposed to do? How are we supposed to practice? How are we supposed to sing? Lord Buddha says, liberate all sentient beings, but be aware that when you liberate them, nobody got liberated. Right? And then Lord Buddha makes, think anybody got liberated, you ain't no Bodhisattva.
and we're not going to call you a bodhisattva. By the way, just that kind of language is very loaded, right? We're not going to call you a bodhisattva. And call is just another code word for that process of your mind organizing a pen out of this cylinder. You see what I mean? That's call. That's impute. That's name. That's, you see what I mean? Your mind is creating the pen. Due to your past karma. Your past karma is forcing your mind to organize these indications or marks or signs. Hey, guess what? Why Lord Buddha talked about signs first thing, right? Your mind sees these indications. Little bit of white, little bit of round, little bit of straight, and it says, and it calls it a pen. You see what I mean? So all throughout the sutra, Lord Buddha is, he's making a joke on us. You know, he's saying, we ain't going to call you no bodhisattva if you think things come from their own side. Because call means organize it into the thing, name it, create a pen out of it due to your past karma, okay? Out of these signs of a pen. And then Lord Buddha jumps to signs, get it? Okay? Like he's on the subject of signs. The signs that mark you as a holy being. These, you have dharma wheels on the palms of your hands and all this stuff, okay? These are the indicators in the same way that the cylinder and the shapes and the colors are indicators of a thing, and then your mind, due to your past karma, organizes it into a pen. And if you didn't have that karma, you might organize it into a something to chew on. Okay? That's why he's got this thing about signs and indicators, okay? Meaning the raw data. And we're going to talk about the raw data a lot, okay? Meaning the white, the cylinder, the straight. And your mind, due to your past karma, is forcing you to see a pen. It forces you so well that you forgot about it. You're not aware that you're doing it. And something happens. You start to believe that's a pen. You see, from its own side. Okay. Now, is it a pen? Yes. Anyone doesn't think so? Come up. I'll give you a Charlie Chaplin mustache or a Hitler mustache, whatever one you want. You see, I mean, is it what you thought it was? No. Is it real? Obviously. Okay? If you don't think so, you know, come up. Nobody's ever done it, but you might be the first. Okay. It's not real in the sense that it's not coming from its own side. If it was coming from its own side, then the dogs that come in here would come up here and write a letter. Okay? It's not. Okay? It's not coming from its own side. And so, Lord Buddha's on the scene. Bodhisattva shouldn't think that way. See, his next thing in the sutra after he says, we're not going to call you a bodhisattva if you think that way, he says, and by the way, bodhisattvas shouldn't stay in anything when they give stuff. So giving means Lord Buddha is already on to the first perfection. He's already talking about the first of the six perfections. He's giving us a clue about something that used to frustrate me a lot. These lamas get up, they tell you about emptiness, and then they say, follow the six perfections, and then you're like, well, how am I supposed to, you know, what am I supposed to do that's different than I did before that makes it a perfection? You see what I mean? If I understand that this thing came from causes, and I knew it all along that it came from a factory, well then, how's that going to change how I lived? You see what I mean? I have this other person who comes. Think of everything as a bunch of dots. You know, like if you have a problem looking at girls in the bus station, just think of them as dots, you know. They're really just dots. You know, and I'm like, dots, you know, and it didn't help. You know, it didn't help much. You see what I mean? And it's not like, supposedly when you learn about empty, it's supposed to be something that suddenly blows your mind and then you're acting differently. You're doing something differently. You see what I mean? And we're now on the subject of the difference between giving and the perfection of giving. Okay? Just giving stuff is one thing. Giving stuff as a perfection of giving is a different thing. Okay? It's the difference between giving stuff, being a generous person, and then being a bodhisattva who's perfecting giving, who's doing the perfection of giving. What's the difference between the two? Supposedly, if you know the difference, you can get enlightened. Okay? Supposedly, if you do it the right way, if you do the same nice stuff you used to do in the right way, it makes you a Buddha. And if you don't, you'll always be left where you are. You see, I mean, supposedly there's some difference. And it's a difference in understanding the thing. And if you don't, you'll always be left where you are. You see, I mean, supposedly there's some difference. And it's a difference in understanding the thing. When I went to work, my Lama sent me to New York City. He said, go work. And you got to learn something in this office in New York City. So I went and joined this business. And I remember there were three of us in the company at the beginning. And they said, here, this thing's called a computer. And I had never used a computer before. You know, this is back in the dark ages. And they said, there was actually a guy, a consultant. He used to come in, he would turn it on, he would get you into the program, and he'd say, okay, now just type this list of 5,000 numbers from the catalog here, you know. And I'd sit there and type for 3-4 hours, you know. And then one night, I remember it was late, and they said, we got to go home, you just finish, you know. So I'm like typing thousands of numbers into the catalog, you know. And then I get to the end, and it's like 2 a.m, and then I realized I don't know how to turn the thing off. You know, and I sat there for 2-3 hours, you know, and I didn't want to waste 6 hours of work. You know, I thought, if I turn it off, am I going to lose all this stuff? Or, you know, it was before computers were common, you know, and I just sat there for hours, and I thought, then I got anger, so I'm just going to turn it off, you know, and I just turned it off, you know, and went home, you know. And I guess it saved itself because it didn't lose it. But what I'm saying is that it's the difference between relating to a computer like that and knowing the program well. So I mean, like giving without understanding emptiness is like sitting there like an idiot and just typing numbers. Are you using a computer? I guess. Do you know how to turn it on? No. Do you know how to turn it off? No. Do you know how to say what you're doing? No. But I'm using a computer, you know. And that's the same thing. That's giving without understanding emptiness is not a perfection, and it's not going to make you a Buddha. You'll lose all the data. In fact, it's a very good example because that giving creates a nice karmic result, and then it's all over. You are back to zero credit card balance. You see what I mean? You collect some good karma, you use it up by eating a good lunch, and you're back to zero. And it has no other good effect on you. It's just over. You see what I mean? And the old way you used to collect karma is like that. If you collect karma without understanding emptiness, if you're just a nice guy, even if you work for Lama Sipa or somebody like that, you know, even if you do incredibly powerful virtues, if you don't understand what you're doing, like your person is just typing numbers into a computer, then the minute you get the result, which will be a nice dinner, you know, nice friends for a couple of years or something like that, then it's all over. You're back to zero. Karmically, you're just back to zero. It's as if you hadn't done anything. You see what I mean? That's giving without understanding emptiness. That's giving, staying in things. They call it staying in things. Staying in things in this sutra is a code word for still thinking that the pen comes from its own side, is what it means to stay in the thing. In this sutra, Lord Buddha says, if you're a bodhisattva and you're still staying in the pen, then you can do all the good, giving away stuff that you want. It's just plain old good karma. It's not going to have any lasting result. It's a good karma, and then you get some kind of nice result, like Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Then, you know that feeling when you hit the bottom of the bowl, you know, and there's this regret, you know. It's like, maybe I should have taken smaller bites. Maybe I shouldn't have shared it with that ball. You know, but there's this feeling you have when you hit the bottom of the ball and there's no more, you know. And that's exactly what normal karmic collection is like that. So Lord Buddha is trying to say here, you got to learn to do karma understanding emptiness. What's the difference? A perfection goes straight into the Buddhahood creation bank account. Okay? When you do giving, understanding emptiness, that karma goes to what we call Buddha creation bank account and stays there. And if you dedicate it properly, it doesn't get destroyed the next time you get angry, for example. Okay, so like basically it's having a foolproof investment that can't be fooled around with. Okay, it's like a definitely great karma if you understand emptiness. Okay, somebody asked me during the break, Do Buddhists still collect karma? What do you think? They still do good stuff knowing that they're going to get certain results. But technically speaking, in the scriptures, we don't call it karma anymore. It's called collecting the two accumulations of merit and wisdom. Okay? Did you ever hear of those? It's your prayer that you do at the end of class. Okay? I take all this virtue and I hope that all people can become a Buddha by collecting merit and wisdom. Okay? That's just a code word for karma, which is collected with a smart understanding of emptiness. Okay? That's just a code word for that. Okay? By the way, who wrote that prayer? It's by Arya Nagarjuna. It's one of his works. Okay? So it's a great one to do. Okay? So now we have to do another like 10, 15 minutes. Cover the difference between giving as Mr. Nice Guy who's ignorant and giving as Mr. Nice Guy who understands emptiness. And it's just a change in attitude. It's not a change in the giving. Okay? You're going to get enlightened by doing little good things for other people in the same way you used to. But you're going to do it with an understanding of emptiness, which makes it totally different. Okay? Then it becomes a perfection. Master Shantideva said in his book about the six perfections, right? People who do the first five perfections without understanding the sixth one, which is an understanding of emptiness, are like blind people. And then those who have an understanding of emptiness are doing the other five as perfections, and they're like people who suddenly got eyeballs. Okay? And that's the difference. Okay? It's like knowing how to use a computer or just typing numbers into a computer. You see? Okay? So here we go. Say Korsum has lots of meanings in Tibetan, but in the study of emptiness, it means the three elements of a situation. The three elements in a situation. Like if I give this pen to Rob, okay, there's three parts, or there's three elements in this situation. There's Rob, who's receiving the pen. There's me, who's giving the pen. And then sometimes we say the pen is the third, and sometimes we say the event is the third. Okay? It depends on, different scriptures have different ones, okay? So Korsum, the three things going on, right? Me, who's giving the pen, Rob, who's taking the pen, and then the pen itself, or the situation, whichever one you want to read it, okay? Because like in patience, you don't really have a stuff like a pen, you see what I mean? There's the person being patient, who's Rob. There's the person who's being patient about, which is me. And then there's my creating a scene that he has to be patient about, or the patience that's going on, the event of someone trying to be patient. You see what I mean? So with all the perfections, with all the six perfections, there's three things going on. Like in giving, the giver, the person getting the thing, and the event, okay? Then when you're, what's the second perfection? Let's say living an ethical life, okay? The first of the 10 ethical actions is, by the way, I propose that we say them in a positive way. I'm an American, I don't like to be told what to do. People say, don't kill. But if they come up to you and say, respect life, go out of your way to respect life. Whenever you see life, try to nurture it and protect it and take care of it. You see what I mean? So in the act of respecting life, there's the respecter, there's the respectee, and there's the respecting. And that's the three elements, okay? There's the life being respected, the being of the life. There's the person respecting the life, which is me. And then there's the respecting that's going on. And that's the third one, okay? What about the third perfection? The art of not getting angry. I hate patience. Patience to me means waiting for a bus. Okay? The art of not getting angry. What are the three elements? The person you're trying not to get angry about, the person who's trying not to be angry, and then the act of not getting angry, or the situation. See what I mean? Those are the three. And it's the same for all the rest, okay? You got it, right? Those are three. Now, the important thing is to concentrate. I'm trying to show you how to do perfection instead of a plain old karma, okay? So here's the plain old karma. Here, Rob, I like you. You're my friend. You talk nice to me. I'll give you a pen, you know? And that's a good karma. Okay, that's a good karma. I will get lots of pens back. They will run out of ink as the karma lessens. And that's how they run out of ink. As the karma to own the pen gets old, then the pen runs out of ink. And then when the last pen runs out of ink, the karma's finished, the action's finished, there's back to zero, I'm still in samsara, I'm still getting old, I'm still getting sick and bugga, you know, and now I don't have any pens, I just, you know, it's nice and it's all over with. You see what I mean? And that's a normal karma. Now how do you change it? How do you not stay in things, okay? How do you not stay in things? Rupalami Nepa. Because Lord Buddha is, remember his next words to Subhuti are, Subhuti, now you want to do the perfection of giving instead of giving? You want to be a bodhisattva? You want to be somebody we call a bodhisattva? Then you're going to have to learn to give this pen to Rob without staying in the pen. Okay, what does that mean? It means understand the emptiness of you, understand the emptiness of Rob, and understand the emptiness of the situation. And then it's the perfection of giving. And that karma goes right into the Buddha creation bank account. The only time you're ever going to take it out is when you turn 65, they give you four bodies. And that's it. There's no like back to net zero and stuff like that. It goes straight into the collection of the two collections. It's not even called karma anymore, actually. Okay, it's called setting up your Buddha body and mind. Okay, it's like that. So what's the difference? How are you going to do your giving now? You look at the object to whom you're giving the thing, or to whom you're being moral towards, or to whom you're being patient about, or you're having joy about, or you're meditating on, or you're having wisdom towards, right? And you look at it and you say, you know what? If I had better karma, he would be, look to me like Manjushri. Okay, I mean, he's okay now, all right? But if I had better karma, I would see the same ball and the same angles and the same cylinders. My mind would be forcing me to see a high-level bodhisattva sitting next to me in my Buddha paradise, and I'm like shooting the ball with another bodhisattva. See what I mean? And I would be seeing that. So as you give the pen, you think about it. That's all. You look at the person you're giving the pen to, and you say, you know, I'm giving that to you because I want you to be a tenth level bodhisattva next time I meet you. In my eyes, you see, he may be a Buddha already, I don't know, but in my eyes, he looks like a normal guy right now, maybe, okay? So, that's a difference, okay? Then, so that you're thinking about the emptiness of Rob, which is the pen thing, right? Then you think about the emptiness of yourself, okay? If I had better karma, I wouldn't have to look down at his wrinkly hand and all his ugly, freckles and stuff like that. You know, I could see Vajrayogini's arm, you know. And it might as well be Vajrayogini's arm because it doesn't have any nature of its own. Rangshin mepa, rangitseniki madhupa, rangilom madhupa, rangilene madhupa. Tomani. It would be empty, you know. It doesn't have any nature of being a human being's arm from its own side. If I had better karma, that karma would be forcing me to see Vajrayogini's arm. You know, you think about that when you look at your arm and you hand the pen to the guy. Then the situation, okay? Why am I in Bodh Gaya still a normal schmuck, you know? And, you know, in the very place where Lord Buddha became enlightened, seated the diamond, right? I still have to see, I'm still in this situation of having to see normal people. I'm still going to have to get on a bus and go to Patna 6 hours on this road. You know, I'm still going to have to be doing, I'm still in this situation of this normal place, you know, that is just, you know, it's pleasant, and Rob and me are both getting older, and I lost my hair, he's getting kind of loose thing here, and, you know, and it's sad. It's a sad thing. You say, you can be having a good time in Bulgaria, but still realize that, you know, my Lama used to have a good time in Bulgaria. He can't come here anymore because he can't walk so good. You see what I mean? And three of my Lamas died this year. And, I just heard about a third one. You know what I mean? And I'm like, that's the way it'll go. You see? It'll just keep going like that. So you say, I don't want this situation anymore. I don't want to have to live in a place. This is called desire realm, and it's a special realm, and it doesn't work right. Nothing works right here. In this world, as you know it now, is broken. Effectively broken. It's dysfunctional. Nothing works right. Every good thing that happens goes bad. Healthy, beautiful, smart, intelligent, sensitive, even virtuous, you know, good monk or nun. Everything dies. Everything goes away. Everything gets broken. You see, I mean, it doesn't work. This place doesn't work right. Why am I still here? Why am I still seeing it this way? Oh, because it's being run by old lousy karma. My old karma that I collected the old way. You know, the good things and the bad things are both going to wear out. Okay? And that's all. So when you do an act of giving, thinking about those three kinds of emptiness. He doesn't have to look like that. I don't have to look like this. We don't have to be in this normal place. If it is a normal place, okay? And then you give it to him. And then it's totally a different thing. It's not the old karma at all. Okay. Next question by Lord Buddha Subhuti. How many miles is it east? And Subhuti's like, I don't get it. You know, this is like they're playing, Subhuti's the fall guy, right? And he says, how many miles is it east, Subhuti? And Subhuti says, well, you know, you can't really talk like that. It's just, it just goes, you know. And he says, no, well, how about west? You know, he says, same thing. Why are you asking me this? North, south. Same thing. They can't say how many, you know. It's just there. It just goes, you know. It's not like a number of miles east, you know. It just goes, you know. And Buddha says, aha, that's how much virtue you get if you give Rob the pen, understanding the emptiness of the three things. Okay, that's all. No limit. Can't be measured. You know what I mean? That's really cool. That's really good. Big difference, okay? Infinite karma, okay? Never wears out, okay? A karma that never wears out. We don't even call it karma anymore. We call it collecting merit and wisdom, okay? And that's how you make a Buddha's body and mind. And that's how you make those marks. Last thing to say, okay? Very last thing. Buddha says, by the way, those marks are fake and they're also true. Okay? The marks you're going to have on your body, he's hung up on marks. Get it? Indicators. Cylinders, colors, shapes, lines, raw data. And then your color forces you to see it in a certain way. That's why Buddha's hung up on marks right now. Marks and indicators. Okay? And then he says to Subhuti, he says, by the way, those marks are fake. And they're also real. Okay, what does that mean? This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy, and then you get really strange translations of these sutras, you know. People just go wild, who don't know anything about emptiness, they don't know anything about what the Buddha meant, and they pick up this sutra and they write a book about it, you know. It's a, oh, the Buddha is like saying nothing exists. So you can do anything you want. Samsara and Nirvana are the same, you know. You know, I had some guy arguing this to me. First he told me about the heart attack operation he had. Then in the next breath he's describing to me how Nirvana and Samsara are the same according to Arya Nagarjuna. Come on! Why did you have your heart attack operation? You know, if it's the same, why didn't you just die? You know what I mean? And then he got mad. But anyway, you know, yeah. Of course they're the same. They're the same in what way? They both have their own emptiness, that's all. You create them with your karma, that's all. It's not saying to me what it means. Anyway, where are we on? Oh, when the Buddha says the marks are fake or deceptive, what he means is not that they're not real, not that I can't give you a mustache with this thing. It's real in that sense, but it's not what you thought. It's not what it appears to be. And that's all. Okay? When he says deceptive or not real or illusory, it doesn't mean it doesn't work. Because you can see it works. Check this out. Ha ha! It works. Okay? He's not saying anything about work or not work. He's just saying it's a loser in the sense that, do you think this pen comes from the pen? Do you think it's coming from out there? Do you think there's any pen, what do you call it? Is this thing penish at all? Is there anything penny about this pen? And you guys say, no, because if it was, then a dog would see it as a pen too. There's nothing penny coming from this object. 100% coming from your karma. Your own karma is making you see it as a pen. And in that sense, it's illusory. Okay? In that sense, it's not what you thought it was all these years. Okay? Is it real? Yeah, you can use it. Look. Ha-ha. It makes lines. Okay? Okay, so at the same moment, it's both illusory and real. No problem. Same for the marks of a Buddha. Last question. So what the hell good does that do me? Who cares if it's coming from its own side? Or it's not coming from its own side? Who cares? You know, I mean, this is another thing that Buddhists are attacked about, you know, especially us poor galupas, you know. Okay, debate about it all day long. Who do I care? It's a pen. You know, I use it. You know, I don't care if it comes from its own side or not, you know. What's the point? You know, why do you guys spend 12 hours a day debating if it's a pen or not? You know, just use it. What? What's the point? Why should we worry about whether it's coming from its own side or not? You can change it. If you know that, then you can collect different karma, and then this cylinder can become Manjushri's arm. It's very important to talk about whether this pen is coming from its own side or not. It's the most important thing to talk about. It is the most beautiful thing to talk about in the whole world. Is this pen coming from its own side or not? Is this ugly, skinny, hairy, freckly arm coming from its own side or not? No. Wow, great. Now I can become a tantric deity in this lifetime. Just show me how. Keep your vows. Oh, hell, couldn't we do it some other way? I mean, that's all. Keep your vows. Perfect. Keep your book. Every couple hours. I hope everyone's doing it, right? We have a mazal. I gotta change the contract a little bit. Anyway, forget climbing vows. We gotta come up with some new word, like the most powerful ways to change your arm into Manjushri's arm within 30 years. You know what I mean? That's all. It's a list of the most important things to concentrate on. It's not a vow. I don't like the word vow even. It's not like some frustrated nun in a nunnery in France who really wants to go watch a movie, but the abbess says good Catholic nuns don't do that. Or, you know, it's not vows like that. It's like, here's a list of the 64 things that you can do to change your arm into Tara's arm within a few years, you know? And then, oh, please, give me the list. I beg you to give me the list. You see what I mean? It's like, oh man, we got more vows to take. Okay, so it's that's the connection. Okay, that's the connection between, that's why we're worried about whether the pen comes from its own side or not. If this ugly, freckly, wrinkly arm with the scraggly hairs on it comes from its own side, I'm in trouble. I might as well just go to Goa and have a party. Okay, but if the way I see it is forced upon me by how well I treated other people and how compassionate I've been, well, then I have hope. Then anything can happen. Then I can have those beautiful marks of a Buddha on my arm. You see what I mean? So that's where we're at now. Okay, we'll stop there. We'll do some prayers. Don't forget mandala. There's two mandalas. The one before is for requesting teaching, because I'm not allowed to teach if you don't ask. And then the one after is called Pangat, which means Thanksgiving. It's like a party mandala. It's like, hey, we talked about the most important thing in the universe today. You know, that's like a Thanksgiving mandala. Did you have a question, sir? Question? This one doesn't have. I mean, I gave you a Sanskrit for the four bodies because people use it so often. You know, if they throw around kayas, you can throw around kayas and impress them. But normally I'm not going to give the Sanskrit for everything. Okay? Alright. I don't even know the Sanskrit for everything. Okay. Here we go. Yeah. Avadi.
Shri Ram Guru Atman Bandha